Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 361. I am all cozy in bed now. Okay, in the last 3 weeks, I've been to Portland, New York, London, Edinburgh, New York again, Baltimore, D.C., and back to Los Angeles. It's been a lot of travel, even for me, but it's nice. I like traveling. It's fun, but it is nice to be home. And now I am doing the intro for the podcast, which never stops. The podcast never sleeps. It's always there for you. Like a creepy fairy godmother who can't really grant you any wishes other than just talking your ears a lot. So she's kind of chatty, but she loves you. By the way, the season finale of the Nerdist television show on BBC America is Saturday, June 1st. And is that correct? Is that going to be the date? June 1st? Yeah, Saturday, June 1st. And that episode's going to have Seth Rogen and Zach Galifianakis. So tune in. It's 10 o'clock p.m. BBC America. And I'll get to this episode in a second. But first, I want to thank the sponsor for the Nerdist Podcast, LegalZoom. This month, LegalZoom celebrates innovation by helping you launch whatever type of dream you can cook up with your brain. But when you do, make sure that you apply for a patent because you need to protect your business. Register your trademark, protect your product services, incorporate, form an LLC. Launch your business dream, whatever it is, make it happen. Just call or visit LegalZoom.com, and they're going to help you from start to finish. They've helped out about 1 million businesses get started right. Celebrate innovation with LegalZoom, and for a limited time, get a special price on trademark, copyright, patent applications using the referral code Nerdist at checkout. Protect your creations and launch your dream at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom can provide self-help services at your specific direction, or they can connect you to an attorney, but they are not a law firm. Don't forget to use the referral code Nerdist. And now here's this episode with Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who we actually taped the episode of the Nerdist TV show that they're on, and then we walked over to the studio and recorded this podcast. And this is a really fun hangout session. By the way, I'm trying not to wake Skydart, who is sacked out. It's not even that late. Well, it's not late by LA standards. It's like 10:30. I don't know what fucking time zone we're in.
Sacked out is the most unpleasant way to describe me sleeping.
Oh, that's adorable. She's talking in her sleep. What secrets will be revealed?
I'm super sacked out right now, man.
Oh, she's dreaming about sax. They better be mine.
Saxophones.
Okay, that's not mine. Here's Nerdist Podcast episode number 361 with Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. By the way, their movie This Is the End opens June 12th, and it's Seth Rogen and James Franco and Jay Baruchel and Emma Watson and Danny McBride and Craig Robinson and Michael Cera, and they all play themselves in the apocalypse. And so the movie, June 12th. Check it out. Well, then check out this podcast first. Unless it's after June 12th, and then check out them simultaneously. That's not possible. All right. We're going to try to reacclimate ourselves to the West Coast time zone now. And good night.
Saxophones.
Now entering Nerdist.com. Okay, cool. Yeah, cool.
I know, but I see
Chris.
I hate Canadians.
If I'm like what? Here, does it pick up enough?
You sound great.
Okay.
Everybody sound great.
What's the Canadian secret? Oh, what is it?
Denim.
Denim's a Canadian secret?
All right, maple syrup.
Maple syrup. Don't get too fucked up tonight, Josh.
You gotta work on Monday.
There you go, buddy. That's what speaks to you. Canada money.
Whoa, you got some.
Have you ever read this?
No, I want to.
Read that.
What does it say?
It, like, is a weird metaphor for all of Canada in a poem.
No. I described Canada perfectly once.
What's the poem?
I said, Canada took all of America's ideals and implemented them correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
What's the poem? What's the
Winnipeg's
poem?
Winnipeg's not great.
The poem is, oh, God damn it. That's going to take some, let there be man.
I have good eyesight.
Oh, good.
It sounded don't like you were trying to translate it.
The winters of my childhood were long, long
seasons.
Whoa,
I wasn't close.
We lived in three places, the school, the church, and the skating rink. But our real life was on the skating rink, and that's it.
That's on your money?
That's what it says on our money.
Yeah.
That's on your fucking money.
Yeah, we don't play fucking hockey. Yeah, like, I don't feel like this.
Play hockey, yeah.
That's not a proper
reference. Wait, you don't play hockey?
Mine would be like, our summers were spent in the synagogue and playing video games. Yeah.
We played GoldenEye in the basement. Yeah.
There's Canada, and then there's Jewish Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Canadian Jews.
Yeah, it's the N64 logo on the...
Yeah.
On Jewish Canada. A sketch called Canadian Jews.
Yeah.
We just thank you.
Oh, is gonna walk by.
We just recorded the Nerdist TV show, and then you allowed us to scoop you into a booth to record a podcast. We are really owning your souls today across a variety of media.
Exactly, it's nice.
Yeah, split between you and our wives.
We're here. Yeah, exactly. We're here already. So,
Seth, the first time I saw young Seth Rogen, I believe the year was around 1998, 1999.
It probably was. Yeah.
There was we were doing a stand-up show in Westwood.
Yeah, the Gypsy, I think Galifianakis was actually there.
He probably was, at the Gypsy Cafe.
Yeah.
And you showed up with Linda Cardellini.
I did, and like her roommate was like friends with
Lizzie Beckwith.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who was an amazing comedian who doesn't really do stand-up anymore.
Lizzie Beckwith?
Yeah, she was super funny, yeah.
But Lizzie Beckwith had the great bit about, I don't do air quotes, I do air parentheses.
Yeah, I remember that joke.
Did you go up that night or did you just show up?
I think I did. I would perform sometimes. I was okay. I wasn't like that good at stand up. I wasn't like great at it by any means.
Go to sort of absorb it or what would you?
I would go to, to try to, it's kind of just when I was in high school, that's like the only place that I would know to go was to comedy clubs. Yeah. Really, like we would like
the talking shtick.
Yeah. I mean, we were the talking shtick.
It was like a lesbian tea house is how it would
describe exactly.
It.
Yeah. Nice. We'd go there.
Wait, that
sometimes.
Was a real place.
That was a real place.
Chris, don't you host the talking shtick?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. It's all after the show stick.
Yeah, I was like 18 or something like that, and I just, I mean, I was new here. I was just trying to, see who was funny, basically, and try to get in with them and watch it. Yeah.
Well, Canada has a very interesting kind of a comedy setup because there's sort of a, from what I understand, there's kind of a monopoly with comedy clubs on. Doesn't Yuck Yucks have like a monopoly across Canada?
Yeah,
and if you perform anywhere else, they're like, you're out.
Yeah, it's really.
And Yuck Yucks isn't even that nice when you go into their places.
No, they're weird Yuck Yucks. But all the guys do it though, I think, right? Like, I think the big comics all play at Yuck Yucks in Canada.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know.
Have you done a Canadian tour?
I have. Well, I've done Just for Laughs a bunch.
Yeah.
And then, and the Vancouver Comedy Festival, but. Toronto has a really cool place called the Comedy Bar, which is a great little room.
Yeah, Vancouver. I don't know. When I was young, everyone would perform at this place called the Urban Well. That was like the big place in Vancouver. And this guy like Brent Butt, who's now like on Canadian TV shows, would perform there. And no one that really. Trying to think, I don't know if anyone really who like became just Brent. Famous over
Michael
here.
J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, Red Fox
would be together.
Oh, a father and son.
Yeah, exactly. Fox Michael and J. Hound. And Red Fox. Red J. Fox.
The fantastic Mr. Fox.
Exactly. Yeah. All the Foxes. Yeah. Jamie Fox.
Samantha Fox from
Mr. Mr. Fantastic. We could do this all day. And we will.
Words are crazy.
Yeah, I remember. And then I saw you before our friend Will Reiser would put on these comedy shows at El Cid that I think I would see you Hard and Firm. You guys would perform there. Yeah, Will.
Yeah. And he was going out at the time with Amy Simmons.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah, I was there. You were there too?
Evan, like my first visit to LA.
Yeah, because me and Evan met Will working on the Ali G show.
And I met that night. El Cid.
Yeah, and Will introduced me to my wife.
And we had a moment.
Jeez. There was a connection.
And that's right around the time he was writing. That was like right before he got cancer.
Yeah, it was
and like, then wrote the script 50-50.
Yeah.
Which you were then in.
Yeah.
Bringing it all in.
Which is a
all because of Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, I like to think I'm the spoke that holds Hollywood together. But El Cid is still there. Like, it's still, like, I think they still have flamenco. That place, when you go in, it looks like you're like, at any minute, this building's just going to fall in on itself.
Yeah, it was really scary there.
Wait, someone's old studio, too. It's like WC Fields or DB. Yeah, someone.
Was that also the night, the one and only time when you were too stoned?
When I ate like a weed brownie and had to leave.
Yeah, that was exactly one time he was too stoned in life.
So what happens to you when you get? I just had to leave.
He turned into like classic paranoid 13-year-old stone person.
Yeah, I don't know about this. We were just talking about that night. That was at El Cid.
Maybe you can tell me this because I've never really. There was one summer in like '97 when Mike Furman and I smoked pot a few times and stared at this. He got this light box from the Sharper Image.
Does the Sharper Image still exist?
No. I don't think so. In catalog form.
Yeah.
Nice. So I think the way this thing worked is that it was like one of the wands was green and represented the bass, and one of the wands was red and represented the treble, and you'd hook it up to your stereo, and it would spin and create these insane flower patterns.
That's pretty cool.
So when you're super high, like if you're...
That's what it feels like. But no, I just became like socially. It doesn't happen often. I just didn't want to. Yeah, it happened once. I just left. I think I just was there. Like, I have to leave.
That's all I do when I get stoned. When I get stoned, I just go, see you guys later. And I just go home and take a nap.
It was the closest to being like, what did you do with my friend Seth?
But then after that, I had one time where I smoked or potted or ate it or something. And then I thought, I'm having a stroke, and if I don't focus on breathing, I'm going to stop breathing. And then I never, ever was able to do it again.
You keep mistaken general anxiety disorder.
Yeah, exactly.
Come to think of it, that does happen even when I don't smoke pot. But if you are prone to anxiety and anything weird happens in your body that you can't quickly identify, you're like, that's impending death.
Yeah.
Stepping on my throat.
I don't know. Sometimes I'll have like a weird like heart pain, and then I'll be like, nah, it's fine.
You're able to do that?
I always assume it's heartburn. I always am like, I had chili yesterday. That's probably what it was.
You go to the doctor, he's like, it's just gas. Here's some soda crackers. Yeah. You know, like, oh, you're right. Thanks,
it's poutine. You had some bad poutine.
It's always poutine.
Poutine basically is the Chicago pizza of Canada, where no matter where you go, someone's like, oh, you went there? No.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
not where you go for
Evan
poutine.
Evan actually is a co-owner of a poutine food truck here
what?
In L.A. Yeah.
It was down the block just yesterday. Called the Gravy Train.
Would you please, we have food trucks outside our little comedy theater at Meltdown. We have food trucks there all the time for shows at night. Would you please bring that? The poutine truck?
I love comics and also live two blocks away from Meltdown. And only recently found out you guys do this there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we do it here because...
Come on.
What are we, like, fucking nerds?
Seriously.
Change the podcast name to The Raddest.
The Raddest. The coolest.
Still IST.
I did a radio show in LA in the 90s and we just decided to name it the number one morning show.
That's a brilliant name for a show.
And we would get these calls. We were like, congratulations. We're like, no, it's just the name. You can name whatever you want. There's nothing.
We should name our next movie the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America is the number one movie in America.
No, then the New York Post is really going to fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
The number one movie in America is the 10th movie in America.
When we were talking about Superbad, we were like, there's a version of this where the title really fucks.
Yeah, Superbad, you're really leading with your chin.
There was one thing, we got one where it was like, Superbad really is Superbad.
Of course.
You're like, mazel tov, you
the
did
script,
it.
I have the script for Superbad, the shooting script. I think it's fucking phenomenal.
Oh, thanks.
It's great.
You should see the movie. It's really good, too.
Yeah, don't. Those guys ruined it.
You know, what's irritating about that is not even so much getting a bad review, but like, really the hackiest thing in the world. And that guy probably high-fived himself.
I know, we're saying you're bad. Yeah, exactly. The hacky joke guy says that our movie sucks.
He should have put it on himself. Superbad made me super sad it wasn't that good.
That would have been clever, at least.
Yeah. So you don't? Do you ever feel like doing stand up at all? Ever? Does that kind of eat away at you, or do you not care?
Not really. For funny people, like Judd made us all do stand up for like months and months.
Yeah. Remember those shows you did?
UCB. Yeah, I would do it.
Were you the one at UCB where Jonah killed it or the one where Jonah didn't kill
it? I saw when he killed it when he did that fucking thing about Hitch.
Oh, yeah, funny. Yeah. Such a funny joke.
Yeah, yeah, like the idea that Hitch is to dads what the Big Lebowski is to guys like us.
Yeah.
It's just like the movie.
That was like his first time, right?
Yeah. And then he kept.
Everyone was pissed off him. Judd, I could see them all.
But then he went up again and like bombed, and we were all like, "Oh, thank God!"
I wish I saw that. Just because as a fellow Jonah, I was like, "Go and stand up now, too." Fucking
yeah, he's literally never done it.
I'm already the other Jonah from the
just from one. Just from one set.
Now he's doing stand up. He grew 6 inches.
You got to do something with that Hitch bit. You can't let it go.
I know. Sell it. You should take it.
Yeah. Next time I see him, I'll be. Can I get that Hitch bit?
It's a good bit.
It's a great bit.
Just by name rights, you should be able to absorb it.
Exactly.
Funny thing he comes up with that he can't use goes to the next Jonah.
The next Jonah in line. That's how it works, right? But, and if you kill the head Jonah, then you become the head Jonah.
There could be only one Jonah.
Jonah Landers.
It was okay. I wasn't that good at it. I don't know. It sucks doing something that you just know you're not as good at as everyone else who's up there doing it, basically. Like, I could just see, like...
Very solid.
I was okay at it, but I wasn't like, I like, you know, I feel like when we like, when we write movies, we're not like the best at it, but like, I feel like we're pretty good at it. But like, I mean, I remember we actually, me and Jonah both performed at, we were like kind of feeling good and we both performed the improv and then Louis C.K. showed up and like, it was like a Who concert. Like, it was like fucking crazy. And then he literally came back. And then we performed and he literally sat in the back and watched us and came up to us after. It was like, so you guys are like playing comedians or something like that? We're like, yeah. He's like, yeah. He's like, I remember he pointed at me. He's like, you're okay. And he pointed at Jonah. He's like, you need a lot of work. It was like the most brutal thing ever.
See, that's not where I thought you were going with that. I thought you were going to be like, I was ready to say, like, you can't compare yourself to Louis C.K., but when Louis C.K.
compared himself to us. Like, we were like, oh, we can't compare. So he's like, he's coming over, and he's comparing himself to us.
I just want
to
let you know, you guys are better at this. You're right. You can't compare yourselves to me.
Yeah, exactly.
On a Louis scale of 1 to 10, you're not Louis.
You got 3 Louis.
Here's how you are.
You drift back into the Louis Anderson scale.
I'm like 6 Louis Andersons.
We watched
the diving show.
You guys are Canadian, so there's a metric Louis scale. So it's exactly. 10 Louis. Get makeup of Louis.
We're 600 yeah. Louis.
You're like a Hecka Louis makes.
I was on the Family Feud with Louis Anderson.
Were you really?
Yeah, the cast of Freaks and Geeks was like on the Family Feud.
Who were you up against?
The cast of the show Popular.
Oh yeah, like that. Leslie Bibb.
Leslie Bibb. I tanked it in Fast Money. I was actually saying to Evan, when we played that game on your show just now, it kind of looked like the Family Feud.
A little bit,
and it gave me like a bad flashback to when I totally tanked it on our Family Feud.
We were in China for the Green Hornet, and he was on some weird show that went for 3 hours. It was like a variety show. And they had this game where they brought out like 25 bowls of different chicken dishes. And like the object of the game never became apparent. Instead of just like, taste something, go like this, and everyone would start
like
sharing.
An SNL bit from the 90s. Yeah. It was super weird.
Yeah, that's a bit like Weird Al was saying when Eat It got really big, they sent him to Japan and to do this comedy show. And he still to this day has no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
But he started singing Eat It in Japanese. He learned it in Japanese. And then he said this old guy in a lobster outfit came out and started demanding that Al eat him. And then
did he?
No, he didn't know what to do, so he just did a pratfall. Al just jumped accordion. On the ground.
Yeah. And I was like, leave my stocking.
But it's really amazing for a guy that I think people, you know, probably go, oh, you're probably a big stoner all the time. You get a fucking lot of shit done.
Yeah. We do a lot.
That's the other side of the coin. Cocaine.
Now we're talking.
The weed's just a screen. We don't know about
exactly.
It's literally a smoke screen.
It's a literal smoke screen.
For much more dangerous drugs.
Yeah, we're productive stoners, I guess you would say. I remember like not wanting to work when I actually think some people I know would be more productive if they smoked more weed, which sounds like a stupid thing to say. Most people wouldn't.
Did you know that about Kevin Smith?
Yeah, exactly. Well, because I
find 70 podcasts.
No, that I just was like, because
you're responsible for his weed smoking.
I know, and I didn't realize that at all. To me, that was just like a casual night of smoking weed. And to Kev, that was like a life altering moment, which is great. But, yeah, like, I think some people, like, hate working because they just want to go home and smoke weed. But if you incorporate it into your work life, then you're willing to work longer
and
more,
I find. That's when Doug Benson started getting really big is when he just
He's
like, you know what, all the time.
Yeah, I think some people have to mesh it or else it's like, or else they resent their job because it's preventing them from doing what they really want to be doing, which is just get high.
I would need a defibrillator around at all times. This is not going to work anymore. I would just be zapping myself. How do you, what's your process of, you know, when you, is it sort of based around one idea or is it, I want to get this group of people together and then we want to make something, or how do you guys work and how does the writing process work for you guys?
The least interesting version of anything you could have. Like we show up and it's like, what if we did a movie, where this happens?
Yeah.
It always just starts with a morning where one of us had an idea the night before, brings it, says it excited. We generally think it's rad for like 4 hours and that we're going to make it next. And then we put it in a pile with like 50 other things like that.
Well, that's an interesting point is how do you, because, you know, you can, I think it's easy if you're a creativity type to get addicted to that feeling of, aha, innovation. Yeah. And then when it really comes down to, now we got to build this thing, then it's not as fun in that process. So how do you stay engaged and how do you keep it exciting?
I think some movies just kind of keep being entertaining. And those are like the really, like this is the end. It's a good example. Like we made the short film like 6 years ago and it was just like, the idea just like kept being funny to us. Like it just like kept coming back when we would talk about ideas we thought were funny. We just kept being like, oh man, a big fucking apocalypse movie where all of us are actors. Like it just kept being entertaining. And it's almost like a Darwinistic process where just like the ideas you like the most are the ones that kind of hang out the longest, and those are the ones that you ultimately do. But I think like something, it's sometimes hard to figure them out. Like it literally took like years to figure out like where This Is the End could go as a movie. Like just like literally like how it could not just be like where it could go. And like the idea ultimately, like what happens in the third act is like, you know, we kind of bring in this like redemptive idea, but like just the, like to come up with that took us like years. We're just like, what happens in this movie, you know? And like, yeah, like we have some movies that literally like we've been trying to do for years and years and years, and they're hard to make. We have this animated movie we've been trying to make. Like
that kind of fuels you.
Exactly. It kind of fuels you. Like, well, sometimes the longer people don't want to make them.
Yeah, you're like, we'll fucking show you.
Yeah, exactly. And you make them crazier and crazier because you're just like, if no one wants to do it, let's just make it even more fucking crazy because no one's doing it anyway. And then sometimes they make those eventually, and then those are like the craziest ones.
I think the big thing is just like when you get pitched a shitty idea from someone else, you're like, no, our idea about the traveling space monkey laser
exactly.
is more fun to work on than whatever we've been.
Exactly, you know, sometimes stuff. Yeah, you get ideas and you're just like, we should just, I'd rather do nothing and try to get that fucking crazy movie going than just work on.
Are you able to go work on a movie just as an actor, like someone else's thing, and just let it, or are you kind of addicted to like, I gotta get my hands in there and I need to be involved in them?
It's not even like, it's just not very engaging, honestly, for me to like just be an actor. It feels like one fraction of an actual full-time job, you know? Like it just, I'm not.
Your fellow actors are not going
to
take
kindly. Exactly. But I think it reflects, honestly, my approach to acting largely. Like, I'm not the kind of actor that, like, does it. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis is acting 24 hours a day. I'm not even acting every second I'm on camera. Like, I'm trying to squeeze it out, but it's not always, you know. So, it's just not my favorite thing to do. You know, to do, honestly, out of like all the parts of the process. I like a movie like This Is the End. Like, it's just fun to be in a big, crazy movie that you know that you would like. But like the actual like day to day acting is probably like my least favorite part of the whole process because it's the most like structured. Like you have to stand here and say this, and you say the same things over and over. It gets boring, and it's like it's just like taxing. And these other guys are really good at it. And you just see James Franco; he could like just scream all day. And I'm just like, man, like these guys are way better at this than me sometimes.
You were really great in Take This Waltz. Which is a movie that fucked me up for a while.
Yeah.
I was actually not able to watch the movie based on Jonah's reaction to the movie because it was
fucked me up real bad. And then the thing that I really loved about the weird kind of jump cut of your all the emotions you were going through after she broke up with you was I don't know, the whole thing was fucking too close to home for I think anyone that's gone through a breakup.
It sounded like such a real account of what that feels like that I didn't emotionally. I was like, I think I'm gonna be too bummed.
I watched it on a plane. I was just like, no, fuck, no. And then I was trying to tell my girlfriend about it, and I was like, it's a bit, I don't know who to root for. I just fuck that rickshaw guy. He's just busy making his fucking cookbook. Why can't you just fucking let him make his cookbook?
Cut him some slack, for Christ's sake. Yeah. Well, that was, but it is fun. I honestly don't get asked to be in a lot of other people's movies. I'm not like being humble or anything. I literally don't get asked to be in a lot of other people's movies. And
the guys on the lead like you to do
this. Exactly. And that's what I pretty much do anything anyone ever asked me to do. So when Sarah Pauly was like, I wrote you a part in this movie, and I was just like, fuck yeah, I'll do it. I mean, it was more than anything, I felt like if she thinks she needs me, then I should do it just for her purposes more than my own, you know? I do like being a part of the team that's making the movie. I like being able to, talk to everyone and be a part of the whole creative process and just acting sometimes. It's fun sometimes, but it can be just not as engaging as all the others.
When you guys wrote this latest movie, were you like, oh, let's check with Michael Cera before we throw him in the script?
Yeah, we went to, we went to all the main guys. Yeah.
We deduced we need these six guys. That's all that matters above everything.
So
else.
just a little background for people who haven't seen the movie yet, or actually this will go up the week that probably right before the movie comes out. But This Is the End is basically you all play yourselves, you and Jay Baruchel and Craig Robinson and Emma Watson and James Franco and Aziz. There's a bunch of great cameos in there. Aziz and
Danny
Kaling, Danny McBride and. And then you guys are at a party at Franco's house, and then you go to get cigarettes, and then the apocalypse happens.
Yeah.
But before that, Michael Cera is totally just shitting all over himself in the movie.
He's being crazy. Yeah, he does cocaine. He has a threesome. He blows cocaine in Crispin's Pasta's face. This is one of my favorite parts.
So not that far from the real Michael
Exactly.
Cera.
Well, we figured this kind of was there was only so many ways to approach people playing themselves. It was they either kind of play into what you expect them to be, or they play way against what you expect them to be. So the six main guys, we went to them before we even wrote the movie. And we're just we don't want to spend a fucking year writing a movie at James Franco's house if we don't know if James Franco wants to do it or not. So we went to them. And they all seemed intrigued by the idea, and they kind of gave us the go-ahead. And then everyone else, we kind of just, it was a wish list. We're like, what if Michael Cera did this, and Emma Watson?
It was a game, we got Aziz. So then Kevin Hart was well, maybe I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
We got Kevin Hart, so then three other people were like, well, if Kevin's doing it,
yeah, exactly. Maybe, and eventually we got a ton of people, and it was really, and I think it became one of those things where everyone saw how far everyone else was pushing it, that it almost became a little competitive. People were willing to push it even farther and mock themselves maybe a little harder than they normally would.
But it is interesting though, because there's almost that little piece of it. And I know I said this on the TV show. There's almost that little piece of it of you guys nodding to the audience and go and kind of saying I know what you say about me behind my back.
Yeah, totally. And it's fun for all of us to do that. Honestly, it's relieving for us, honestly. I think it's relieving for Franco to be able to acknowledge that people view him as a pretentious artsy guy, And it's it's fun for us to make a joke about Green Hornet. It's nice to let people know that we're kind of in on these things, that we're not completely fucking oblivious to how we're perceived in pop culture in a lot of ways, you know? And so it was relieving in a lot of ways. We got to make all the jokes that we actually make to each other on screen, as opposed to having to do it through characters.
So when you first pick up Jay Baruchel at the airport, and there's the TMZ guy, and he's Seth, do the laugh,
do the Seth Rogen laugh, and I did it. But that's what they do all the time, and yeah, I mean, it was I mean, and it is like, it's super meta. I mean, it's like the weirdest fucking thing ever, how like meta it would be.
Yeah,
at
there's
times.
Like extra little layers. There's a song in a scene with Seth and Franco that's by a band that Franco's in, and Franco's the singer of the song. We try to get every little.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers.
Is anybody a painter? We'll put your paintings up on the
Franco
wall.
Painted Franco all painted all the paintings. All the paintings actually.
And while we were making the movie.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah. Between takes. He would paint like people.
Yeah, like those Seth. Well, like there's a scene where we show up at his house and he's painted my name on a big painting. And that literally happened. Like he showed up like a week early to New Orleans
with
and we're like
Josh Smith.
Yeah, Josh Smith, who's actually like a pretty famous painter, and he's like, I want to paint the painting in my apartment. And we gave him like this big space, and I showed up to look at the paintings. And the first thing I saw was like a 20-foot canvas that said Seth Rogen on it. And it was like just like he's like, do you like it? I was like, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think it's okay. Just movie. There's a big Pineapple Express, a recreation of the poster that he did.
Yeah, he painted a lot of the shit.
That's also fun too, is you guys are basically pitching the sequel to Pineapple Express in This Is the End.
And then we make it.
And then you make it. You sweet it, basically. You guys kind of sweet it.
I mean, and what's funny is that is actually our idea for a sequel for Pineapple.
Yeah, we talked about it for years with David Gordon Green and all the guys.
Yeah, like, if we were to actually ever make it, that is the story we came up with.
Two things I want to say is, first of all, I thought the special effects of the movie, and I told you in the show, were fucking awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's like that I was not expecting that part of it. Like, oh, fuck, that thing looks awesome.
We've done so much stuff over the last few years that we hadn't done before, Green Hornet with explosion stuff. But Green Hornet had, like, almost no visual effects.
Yeah.
We just actually blew stuff up. So this is the first time we had to, like, get in there and, like, have a laser pointer and be like, the color of his ear is weird. There's a haze around his knee.
Yeah.
Can that texture be more like a moth?
It was really mind-numbing. You spend, like, hours hypothesizing how, like, fake light is bouncing off of fake objects in, like, fake space. It's super fucking weird.
It's like a philosophy class.
Yeah, it's really strange, but...
It's especially strange because you know that in the room, we know the least.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time you go to visual effects room, you know less than everything.
Yeah.
But you make it like a chair.
Well, eventually we just kept being like, it looks kind of whack. Like, is that an acceptable note?
Can you just do less shitty?
Yeah. Can you make it look less whack?
Well, so what, since I don't fully understand the, you know, like the structure of the movie business in the sense of like, if you guys all want to make Pineapple Express the sequel, what stops that from happening?
So many different things.
Yeah.
The wackest thing we've learned is like the budget's always weird.
The wackest.
Yo, that'll be our podcast.
Yeah, it's
yo, let FG talk, dogs.
Whack talk.
Yeah.
We all just say whack.
You could just make that up, and I'd be like, okay, I guess I'll say that. And then I'm going to go to Canada.
We did
like
think so.
Fake Canadian phrase.
Told someone tugging the moose's tail was like an expression recently that people believe it. Like, you're tugging the moose's tail
and
on that
thing
one.
Is, move around Canada is.
Yeah.
Applying to anything.
That's really funny.
We want to win.
So what are the what does stop a movie like that from being made?
It's like, when we first made it, everyone was nobody. Now everybody...
It's money, mostly.
So, like, you know, like everyone has to take cuts to their pay to make it affordable. But if they do that and they want back end, but then can everyone get enough back end? And it's just all different layers of money.
It's hard. Yeah. I think, like, financially, it's confusing to do a sequel for, like, a movie like that. Because, like, the studio made so much money off the first one. And then that's what they want for the second one.
So they want to pay the same thing.
Yeah. So literally, and all the actors are like, well, we made you so much. We got paid shit for the first one. And
right.
So it literally, it is all about money. But it's not something that any of us, honestly, if we all sat down and were like, we're fucking doing it, then we would just do it. It's not something that we all are like dying to do at this exact moment. I mean, we kind of like This Is the End was almost like a Pineapple Express sequel, honestly. Like, it has essentially the same cast and we're all just screaming at each other, running around like idiots. So it's basically the same thing.
Do you need the studio system still? Or do you feel like, oh, you know, we could make something on our own?
The fact that they're the distribution outlets
means
that you even when we haven't made movies with the studio, you eventually come back around to needing the studio.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, the distribution is what, like, it sucks so hard. It sucks to work really hard on making a movie and then not have it be released in a good way, like to not have people see it. And like, say what you will about studios, but like, they put movies in front of a lot of eyeballs, and like, some do it like really well. Like, Sony like markets the shit out of our movies, and like, they like the Pineapple Express campaign was great. Like, they've come up with really good stuff. And when you don't have a major studio, sometimes just like, I've seen it with my wife made a very small independent movie last year.
Goon that I made.
He made this movie Goon last year, even with 50-50, which was like a pretty small movie we made. Like
they all still got out there. And
they got
well,
out there, but you
the
just
studio's
see, yeah,
like don't let them.
Yeah, when you don't have like a big studio infrastructure behind you, it's really hard to like get a good. Like a ton of people
then
to
you
see
need
your
some
movie.
Kind of King's
speech. Well, that's why. Yeah. That's why people, you know, like
come up on that King's speech.
Yeah, that King's speech shit.
The whack ass.
Yeah, that whack ass King's speech shit. What's calling for stuttering about?
Greetings, wax. Damn it!
Yo, motherfucker came and speak.
Royal family, the Whack Pack.
We should rename the show the Whack Pack for whenever we come on.
Seth Rogen and the Whack Pack in
the
morning.
Whack Pack.
That'll be our wolf.
Exactly.
I mean, Whack Pack. Is it even you know when so you spend a lot of time making? I mean, to me, the thing I love about stand-up is like, oh, you do it, set goes well, set doesn't go well, whatever, it's over, you can do it again right away. But you spend months, years working on a movie, and then it comes out, and then, oh, fuck, it didn't turn out exactly the way we wanted, or people didn't go see it. Yeah. Are emotionally, are you able to let it go, like, once it's released, or do you take all that shit on afterwards?
Nothing ever goes away and you take it all.
Yeah, you take it on, definitely. Like, it. I mean, not for a huge amount of time. But the thing is, if the movie's actually good, which, you know, not every movie we've worked on is, but when they are actually, like, really good, then, like, then it actually doesn't matter how well they do. Because, like, you will reap the benefits of, like, the quality of the movie, you know?
Yeah, like, 50-50 like, wasn't a major landslide of money for us, per se, but people, like, respect
yeah,
us
but and
more.
It's given us a lot of opportunities to, like, work with people that probably would have never worked with us had we not made that movie, because it turned out good, you know? And so, like Observe and Report's another good example. Like, that movie, like, didn't make very much money and, like, wasn't even critically very well received, but, like, it is just an awesome movie. So Jody was able to get, you know, like, he could continue working on movies. So, like, it's not like, if the movie's awesome and it doesn't make a ton of money, it's not like you are shunned from anything, really. I mean, it's you're denied a lot of great things happening, but you aren't, like, necessarily shoved off into a corner if you've just made something awesome. So that's what's nice. And after years of making movies that both have done pretty well and really shitty, you slowly, it becomes easier when they do shitty because you have like some faith that they'll let you keep going in some capacity.
And then there's the dirty flip side where you make a shitty movie, but it just makes a bunch of money and you feel dirty and good.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I was honestly, sometimes it's better that they don't make a lot of money. Sometimes I'm like happy. Like a lot of people didn't go see it. Cause I'm like, poof, wow. Like it's not.
I was with the girl last night and she pulled a dirty flip side and it was fucking awesome.
Oh wow. That's exactly
the dirty flip side.
That's the signature move of the Whack Pack.
Exactly. The Whack Pack. Now the dirty flip side.
I mean, it's, you know, I think, you know, a movie like 50-50 is, I think, a smart long-term career play because it allows you to show people, like, so we don't always just do one kind of movie. Yeah. We actually are pretty versatile. Do you feel, I feel like there's this sense that the film industry is this weird giant that just stares at everything that's happening in Hollywood and they're like, he did that so he can never do that again. Like, do you feel like there is a kind of a Borg-like system that dictates what you can and can't do, or can you pretty much get around
it? I feel like that exists, but we are not.
Yeah,
there.
And we can find ways to circumvent.
We're subversive enough that we're just like to the side of anything like that.
Yeah, it's like all about like we just try to make movies that aren't that expensive. I think now that after Green Hornet, that was like the lesson we learned is like stay out of like the budgetary world where like they give a shit about what you
right.
do.
The whole thing is like if Kato just told him to go fuck himself.
Yeah,
right
exactly.
Now, that'd be so much more.
I
fun.
Know. And if this movie cost $80 million less dollars, we could do that. But so I think, in creatively thinking of whatever idea you want to do, you have to put a dollar value on how much you want to make it for that's realistic. And I think that's why some people are like, they won't make my movie. It's because you wrote a $400 million movie that's about, like, a fucking, you know, dude who's lonely. Like, I think a lot of people sometimes...
That's called Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good. But I think sometimes people's idea, like, don't realize their ideas don't warrant the amount of money they're looking for. And, like... Like they make $100,000 movies. They make the most boring fucking movies on earth all the time. Like if you approach it right, you can get almost any movie made in some capacity. You know,
it's yeah, just like when we were writing Superbad in our teens, our strategy was like we will get jobs, we will make $10,000, we will buy a camera,
and then we will go make Superbad.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like, the script was funny, so we're like, even our version of it will get us something. We'll get us a job. We'll get us something. So, like,
we were just trying to get on This Hour Has, what
is it? This Hour Has 22 Minutes? Yeah.
You don't know the Canadian TV show This Hour Has 22
Minutes. God. Damn it.
But I think
I know the Red Green show.
Yeah, you do? That's actually that's impressive. That show's not funny. I don't get it at all.
Oh, thank God. I thought I was confused. I watch that
and I'm like, who are these people? Like, what is this?
This is the dry, you need to drink water. Like, this is the driest comedy. I'm feeling parched. You've been watching this. Weird provincial Canadian.
People almost telling jokes. I don't get it at
all. Does the success or does the, you know, like get millions of dollars for things, is it a head trip at all or is it pretty fucking nice? Or do you feel more pressure or do you just like, how did
more.
It?
Yeah. Just
more. I mean, but because honestly, it's, you know, I mean, you guys were all doing well before, but then it was like, it got really good. It seemed like.
Being a lifeguard, I was not doing that.
He taught Aquafit for a few years.
Really?
Before I started eating food. No, it was funny. I looked no different. Like, I found out you could get paid like $25 for 45 minutes. Good deal.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Buys a lot of poutine.
You double it, you're a stripper, but I didn't have the body.
But is that part of the success thing? Is that head trippy or how do you?
Yeah, it's super weird.
Super, super, super weird.
I was literally like sitting eating chili at my dining room table just today, being like, this is fucking crazy. Like, I have a dining room table. Who saw that coming?
I just got a house 6 months ago or 7 months ago, and all I ever think is like, I own that palm tree.
Yeah,
right.
Like, you could go. Tree, and I could sell it if I want.
Yeah. You could uproot it and sell that palm tree. But honestly, one of the best things about it is that you get to do crazier movies, I think. Like, it's that. You're not like fully thinking like, oh, I need this to do well or else I won't have any money. You can think like, yeah, I have some money. Now I can make just ridiculous shit that we think
it
is
doesn't
funny.
Hurt that in my head I was going to run a YMCA swimming pool and you were going to be a broke comic in Vancouver.
Exactly. That's the thing. We both had very low expectations of ourselves. Yeah. Like,
my big goal was college, like a junior college professor.
Yeah. I thought I would just be like a stand-up comic. Like that was kind of like my only aspiration. And now, like, honestly, like just writing movies, like, if you were just like, that's all you guys got to do anymore, like, it would suck a little, but it's not that, it's fine. Like, I think we're so lucky. It's fucking great.
I mean, Freaks and Geeks, you know, you work on the show that seemingly everyone loves but doesn't pull the numbers or whatever that the network needed to see, but a show that is beloved and still people look back and go, fuck, I wish we had gotten more episodes of that show. Like, did that... How did that prepare you for what was ahead?
I think very well. I was weaned off failure from good things. that was my introduction to Hollywood. Was being on. I was on Freaks and Geeks. It was great. It got canceled immediately. Then I was in this movie Donnie Darko. Actually, the first movie I was in. It was like a huge cult hit. And, like, nobody fucking saw it at all. It was, like, a massive failure. And then I did Undeclared, which was, like, a great TV show. We all, you know, it was super funny. And then it was canceled even faster than Freaks and Geeks was canceled. So
and then I came along.
Exactly.
He literally was your career lifeguard.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, I said he needs me. And I just,
did you have the whistle and the zinc oxide on the nose? Yeah. Get out of the pool, Seth.
Leaving the fanny pack.
Yeah. Runs up to you and said, I felt something.
But it was good. It was good preparation because it really showed you like it doesn't matter how good shit is. People won't necessarily like it, but it also showed like if it's good, like it'll kind of live on and like you will be able to keep working off of the fact that you at one time made something that didn't suck.
You're talking about karma.
I'm not talking about karma. You fucking hippie.
do you ever think we could make a Freaks and Geeks movie, like get everyone together? I mean, you sort of do that in a way.
Yeah, we're almost all in This Is the End in some capacity, but we, I don't know. It would be
weird because it'd be past college at this point.
Yeah.
They would have to be adults. They'd have their own kids.
They'd be the teachers.
I would do it. Why the fuck?
Or you use that X-Men tech and make them all.
Yeah, guys. Exactly. Just de-age us. Patrick Stewart us.
You replace James Franco with Dave Franco.
Yeah, exactly.
or do that Bruce Willis thing in Surrogates where everyone had the weird.
Josh Gad could be me.
Give yourself some credit.
That's so fucking funny to hear you say that.
John Daly could just be on his knees.
Exactly, yeah. We just recast ourselves. It's not a bad idea.
That would be amazing.
Busy could be that girl from Friday Night Lights, Amy T, the coach's
daughter. Now with Veronica Mars, everyone's rushing to Kickstarter to be like, we have the right guy.
I know. Everyone's rushing to give their money to movie studios, which is like, this is awesome. Warner Brothers started a Kickstarter page.
You guys, they don't have any more Harry Potter movies left. We have to give them money.
I do have to say, I don't know why this sort of like, I guess this because I'm just a fucking fanboy of things, but seeing Emma Watson in your movie go, everyone get the fuck back! I was like, oh my god, she swore! I don't know why, even at my age, that still was like...
Well, when I first saw William Shatner say shit, it really threw me for a loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emma swearing freaks people out a little bit. I remember what happened in the room. Everyone was like,
oh my god.
Yeah.
And she's pretty badass in the movie.
She is badass. Mm-hmm. That axe is bigger than she is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whack pack.
The whack.
We're talking Emma Watson today. Yeah. On the whack pack.
She gets 4 M's and 3 H's.
All I think of is Howard Stern's whack pack. So I'm trying to be like, who's Beetlejuice? I know. Oh, shit.
We all are.
At this point, what is the horrible question that you always get asked in interviews? Like when you sit down, you're doing a press junket, and then someone thinks, oh, I'm going to be the first person to ask this question, and then they're the millionth person to ask that question.
It's a good question. It's kind of movie specific. Like it's funny. Like we always joke around, like the cast members of whatever movie you're doing. Like you can tell early on, like which like fucking Guilt Trip is just like, what's Barbara Streisand like a million fucking times in a row, and like this it will be like, what's it like to work with your friends, what's it like to play yourselves. Like it's always like for every movie there is two things that everyone will ask you, but it's okay. I mean, you know, it's doing press is not
there. But there are questions that are unanswerable. You cannot properly say, oh, working with this person is akin to this experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like playing street hockey in roller skates.
But what's funny is like I actually slowly begin to resent the journalists that try to mix it up. Like I'm
oh my god, is that like, happening right
I'm
now?
So
is that happening
on right autopilot now? That just it's like when they try to ask me like a curveball question, it's like, fuck you, just ask me how it is to work with my friends. I know the answer.
Yeah. What does art mean to you?
Yeah,
Barbara's
exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Barbara's Bob's is nuts.
they try to like David Frost you or something.
I know, exactly. Yeah. Even just when it's a little different. Sometimes I'll just try to be thoughtful and I'll just be like, uh-oh.
Well, those the press junket days are so weirdly unnatural.
Oh, it's
of
the
just
worst
like,
thing in the world.
8 hours and they just parade person after person and you have to sit there and be like,
oh, it's like crazy. It's like actually crazy.
Is there a level you can get to where you say no to press junkets?
I always think like there is, and then I literally like keep track of who's still like,
and then
does it.
And then
see, like, Will Smith's still fucking doing it. He's still doing it. You can't stop. Yeah, they like they make you keep fucking doing it.
And anybody who does that, it's like, what happened to them?
Yeah. But I've never seen one second of one of those interviews I've ever done on one of those press junkets, and I've spent like collective like 6 months of my life talking to them. It's like truly crazy.
Yeah,
like,
Jonah after his whole Oscar run was just like, I understand why like Brad Pitt and these guys are so famous. They just work harder.
Yeah,
like, they just do it. Like they do shit that I like am afraid to do because I don't want to do it again for the million. And they just do it.
Yeah, like you just got to do it.
Oh, like we were on the. Sony
it gets embarrassing doing it with your friends. Like, oh yeah, like this was a defining
you
moment.
You tell it was from your perspective.
Yeah, it was like this was like. Yeah, the moment I realized I will never be the most famous guy. We were walking into Sony and Will Smith was walking out. I'd never met him. I'm like, holy shit. And so he came over and I said hi to Will Smith. And then there was like a Sony tour walking by with like 50 tourists in it.
And we avoid these like all
like
the time.
I avoid them like the fucking plague. And so me and Will Smith both turn our heads and see the tour. And at the same moment, I go, fuck. And I start walking away from the tour. He goes, hey! hey, everybody! And walks over to the tour and literally took pictures with every single one of the people in the tour. And I was like, you deserve every penny, Will Smith. You can have it, man.
Man, Will Smith, you get all the shit.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be with the Whack Pack.
Whack Pack don't talk to tourists.
Exactly. Whack Pack hide from tourists. I'll be in my car smoking weed.
Do you feel like you're a pretty, are you guys... You're pretty happy, upbeat guys in general.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, good.
Is it when you guys got your first big paycheck? What was the weird thing you bought?
And how big was it?
I went to relax the back and bought the best massage chair. I was driving my grandmother's Maxim that she gave me. Maxima.
Yeah.
And it was get a new car or massage chair. And I went massage chair and I have it and I use it every day and it's the best thing I've ever bought.
Still,
the Maxima. Thank you so much.
He had it installed in the Maxima. Actually,
Seth, is yours as thrilling as the massage chair?
What did I buy? I don't know.
Can't get much more thrilling than a fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless he has a blowjob chair.
I have one of those salad tossing chair. Yeah.
I had someone ask me if I ever did that a few months ago.
Really?
We were having a party.
What'd you say?
Yeah, actually, fuck your chair.
Jason Stone, executive producer of This Is the was looking at the chair while someone was sitting. He was like, you ever turn around and just stick your dick in it? I was like, no, but it'll probably happen now.
Now you know.
You get back home and you just see the chair. You're like, oh, hi.
Just you. It's awkward.
I know we were laughing just a second ago, but did you fuck the chair?
All seriousness.
I really need to know.
You fuck that chair.
Yeah, call in with your chair fucking stories.
Hi, one time I fucked my girl's chair real good. It's a folding chair. I am horribly injured.
Whack pack.
It was an electric chair. It was pretty kinky.
Oh. Actually, one more chair story. The day I got it, Seth came over to try it, got in the chair. It started massaging him, and then the power went out, and he was locked in. He clamped his cap. It was like funny and shit. He was like, I can't move.
I'm literally stuck in your
power back on. I'm like, I don't think like a wrench, a crowbar, like there was no way out of that.
It was swallowing me. Yeah. It was like that thing in Ghostbusters.
You will become one with me now.
It's a prison chair. You can capture people.
Get in the pink slime from Ghostbusters.
Evan Goldberg, the massage chair killer.
You think you're just gonna fuck my chair, and then you're fine.
Exactly.
My dick. It won't let go of my dick.
The chair fucks you back.
Oh, I love that horror movie. Fuck chair. Yeah.
Fuck chair. All the eating arms are exactly. Just dicks.
Dude, it wouldn't be any weirder than rubber.
A movie about a chair about a possessed tire.
A chair about a tire.
Oh, I saw the trailer into that.
Yeah, it's good. Confused. You know, it's great because they take it real seriously. It's just this demonic.
I heard it's really good, that movie.
Yeah.
Is there a genre film that you still are like, we haven't cracked. We got to figure that one out. I really want to make that.
Probably not.
An animated movie we're trying to make. Very hard.
Space movie.
Space movie.
We're working on
Sword and Sandal? I don't know. Sword and Sandal picture?
Actually, there's an answer. Musical.
Yes, like a musical.
Musical. That would
be
nice. We'd
like to make something musical. We're terribly musical people.
We can't help but create music everywhere we go.
And we're like, why shouldn't we put this in the movies?
That would be fun.
We have some funny musical ideas we'd like to pull off one day.
But it's hard.
Just, you know, we have South Park guys.
Yeah, we have to wait enough time between Book of Mormon so we're not compared.
Again, Josh Gad.
Yeah, exactly. Damn it.
Son of a bitch.
I'll play him now.
Do you get to a certain point where... Because I feel like this happens with a lot of comedy people. They get to a certain point where they go, I want people to know that I have this other dimension about me. I don't want to just be this.
You probably need that other dimension in order to...
Yeah, exactly.
That.
Yeah, I don't have that dimension. I don't have another dimension. No, honestly, I don't, it was fun to take this waltz, but I would kill myself if those were the types of movies I always made, you know? It's way more fun to make funny movies. It just is... There's nothing better than when you're on set and you're filming a scene and you're just looking at the other people I can't fucking believe this is happening right now. I can't believe 200 people are working to make this ridiculous thing come to life. Those are the best moments, and you just don't get those on serious movies very often, I don't think. So that's what I'm always chasing is those moments where you're filming something and you're just looking around can you fucking believe this is happening? Like,
I think some of the best ones are usually with the props guy.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll be like, we don't know which dildo to use. We couldn't understand what you meant to the script.
You go back to the dildo store and get the correct one.
It is always that. Like, and that's what's fun. Like, I mean, you spend so much time making the movies that now when it's like you worry more about, like, will making the movie be fun than will the actual movie, you know. Like, you want it to turn out good, obviously, and that's, like, the goal. But, like, you want the process to be fun.
Yeah,
like,
you also want to have a good 6 months.
Right? Yeah, like, you spend so much time making it. Actually, so you don't want to be...
If it wasn't fun, our friends would be like, I'm not fucking doing another one with these guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's true.
We got to maintain this shit.
Yeah,
we've set a hard precedent to live up to.
When you guys write, because we had the Tom Lennon and Ben Garant on, and they were talking about how they write together, and it's sort of like... They'll just split it up and go, you write this, you write this.
Oh, we never do that.
We're the polar opposite.
You guys sit together?
We have one computer. We sit together. I type with my left. He types with his right.
We hold middle hands. No, we like, yeah, like very early on, even like when he was in college for a while and I was here, we would like never split up work. We would be on the phone or something.
We'd brainstorm shit separately if we had to.
Yeah.
But when it came to like the written word, we're so codependent that like we're not good at the shit the other guy's good
right.
at.
Yeah,
because there was no point in getting good at it because he got it covered. So.
Yeah, but yeah, we would like never write dialogue without the other guy there.
Just because every time we're writing and I make a mistake, and he's like, "No, it'd be funny if it was this." All I think is, well, if he wasn't here, I just would have written the bad one.
Yeah.
So really quickly before we let you guys go, is there any information, anything you can leak or say or something coming up that you're excited about or anything that you're working on?
I don't know. Not yet.
I heard what he said and I'm already excited.
Yeah.
I heard sausage porn. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Stick with that. Yeah. We're making a sausage porn.
A Whack Pack production.
Yeah.
Whack Pack production.
Yeah, I don't know. Sausage party. That's what. that's something that's something we're actually trying to make.
Trying to make an animated movie called Sausage Party.
Yeah, oh, this makes me very happy.
Let you try to figure out what the title might imply.
Exactly.
Anthropomorphic sausages.
Exactly.
Party.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like Cars, but with sausages.
It pretty much is. Yeah, pretty much. We're trying to make an offshoot of Pixar called Dixar. I don't know if they'll go for it.
He's got to clear the rise from that big director in the 70s, you know, the Dick Czar.
Yeah, the Dick Czar. He was appointed the United States' new Dick Czar, I think.
I am your Dick Czar.
He's the Minister of Dicks, but down here is the Dick Czar.
The Dick Czar.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out. Thanks for doing the TV show. And This Is the End is fucking awesome.
Thank you so much.
And you gave me a private screening of it at Sony, which was crazy because I was basically just alone in a theater. And I show up and a projectionist is like, okay, I'll start it. Like,
I know, it's great.
I have to see every movie this way.
We can't do other movies, but if you want that experience again,
I'll just watch that movie.
We
could
probably swing like After Earth. That's a Sony movie. What's coming out?
Cool. Thanks so much for being here, guys.
Thank you, Evan, guys.
And Seth, no, it's good to see you again.
Awesome.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
God.
That was awesome.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Whatever your legal document needs, LLCs, wills, trusts, trademarks, and more, they've got it. Over 12 years and 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom. Start your business or protect your family today at LegalZoom.com using the offer code Nerdist.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.